innings or 7-8 innings, whatever. If his arm is not in good shape, he can't make it for the next start.
Okay, right.
He maybe pitch 2, 3, 4 innings, but I mean he physically is arming because he's the cold weather.
Right.
Okay. Now what'll happen when your arm's in good shape? You won't have a real good start that next time out. You might pitch pretty good, but your physical stuff won't be quite as good. But all your subsequent starts now, 3rd, 4th, because your arm's in good shape, will be good. And you'll see guys get off to start, you know, win 5, 6, 7 ball games in a row, okay, rather than get off to a slow start. So to me, trying to make that into a nutshell, is that beside what people are paying to see, after opening day, everybody gets out. You got to show them a good brand of baseball. And physically, you're less susceptible to getting hurt.
What is the reason that pitchers today can't go 250-plus innings like they do when you were throwing a lot of pitchers?
Well, Don Sandy used to talk about pitching on 4 days rest instead of 5. They don't throw enough between starts. And you have some more specialists. That now you got the setup guy to get to your short reliever. You know, I mean, it's a joke. See, before you had a short guy, he'd come in. I might come in the 6th or 7th inning if I was your short reliever, if they felt that he was not, you know, gonna do it. But soon as this comes from spring training, as soon as the better shape that you're in, the Dodgers for years, I don't know if they still do it. You pitch 2 or 3 times at least 7 or 8 innings in spring training. If you go 7, you go 9. If you go 8, you can go 9. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the pitchers come out of spring training and never pitch over 5
right.
innings in spring training.
Sure.
And they're saying, I used to work 40 innings in the spring. And I was a relief pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have you working that often. You get into to where you can complete game. Also, too, the pitchers, it's about as weak as I've ever seen it in the major leagues. And that's due to expansion. You got expansion, and that does it. You know, and you look around, I can count about 10 pitchers that you know, to me, you've got the quality type pitchers. There's a lot of younger pitchers in there. I see some younger guys coming up, but I mean, I look at Maddox, the guy at Philly, Danny Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. Having a great year.
Okay. Cone.
Another great year.
Saberhagen, as old as he is, still gives you a pretty good game mm-hmm. without the physical problems. Okay. Now, the other guys over Atlanta, Smoltz and Avery and Glavin over there have pitched a lot of innings over the last 5 years and might be taking its toll. If you look at Maddox's total, his pitch total is a lot lower than those three guys. Mm-hmm. What I look at when I look at the box score is you look at the number of hits and number of base on balls and look to see if there's an error. It tells you how many base runners he's got per 6, 7 innings. He's got 8 hits and he's got 4 walks. That's 12 base runners in 6 innings. I mean, you've got to have 2 to 3 guys on base, so you're pitching under a lot more stress.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Maddox's games, no walks, 3 hits, how many base runners does he have?
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, so this is why he physically is a little bit stronger. Cone will do it, you know, a high strikeout. Rio, you know, there's a guy that can do it, you know, which when he puts together his game. But if you look at the ERAs, you're up into the 5s and 6s.
Yeah.
And, you know, Colorado's not a good – it's thinned out because the expansion is taking away the stronger staff. And you look at the best clubs that are doing the best is the Montreal staff and the Kansas City. I think – don't they have the lowest least blown saves, the best ERA?
I think so, yeah.
Kansas City, Montreal.
Right. Montreal, definitely.
And Atlanta was always that way. And
yeah.
The Giants, but they've had some injuries.
Yeah, well, McMichael's blown 10 saves alone down in Atlanta, I think.
Yeah.
So it's
see, when I said that beginning of the year, they asked me about Dodger staff and whatever, and you know, what you have to reckon with is when you play on the road, you don't get to hit again. And when you've got a poor bullpen, mm-hmm. that's where it's going to show up. You're going to lose a ton of games on the road because you'll have the lead, and you blow the
right.
lead, the game's over. You don't get to hit it. You don't get to hit again.
What do you think of the kick just off? What about Dreyfuss there?
Great. I just thought that they rushed him because they were in need of somebody, and he wasn't quite ready. He had not seen the major league. And I laugh. This is you doing this interview. They said, gee, he's 23, and they're asking to do a role. That's what they did to me. I was 23.
That's right.
I pitched the last scouring game I started was the second game of a doubleheader, August 30th or 31st in August, and I pitched a shutout against Pittsburgh and didn't start a game the rest of the year. They stuck me 23-year-old. Here's the ball, 8th, 9th inning. You go get Aaron out, Matthews out, and all, right? I was 23. So don't say, okay, but I'd already been there a while, so that was a little bit easier. So here, this guy, next year when he comes back, he'll have a better idea what he's supposed to do. They said his stuff, his ball moves all over the place, and I think that as soon as he can formulate the mental and the physical things together, you're going to have a pretty good pitcher.
Now, you mentioned in that game it was a turnaround for you in the 59 season. You had a home run and I think another hit. Did you like to hit?
I had two hits.
Did you like to hit as a pitcher?
I was a good hitting pitcher. I didn't get as much notoriety as Drysdale.
Right.
But I pinched hit in the series in 59.
Did you? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I pinched hit in the game. I didn't get into it. In the fifth game, we lost 1-0.
Uh-huh.
I was warming up, and I let off the inning and grounded out to third off of Donovan. And in the sixth game of the series, I went 2-for-2. So I hit 500, 2-for-4.
That's great.
So, and
it was a good World Series.
That's what I'm saying. So when I talk to guys that played, when I says, how many hits you got in the series? I said, how many times you pinch hit? You're talking about, because pitchers don't get credit for their their hitting.
Well, especially
but,
nowadays.
But before I came up in that season, I was at St. Paul, and we had Eddie Roebuck and Fred Kipp and a guy named Bobby Darnell, didn't play any big league baseball, and myself. And the manager, at one game, pinched hit all four of us in a row.
That's unusual.
Hit was a left-hand pitcher. We were all, Kipp was left-handed, but they brought in a left-hand pitcher. He took the leadoff hitter out, was left-handed. So he took the 7th, 8th hit, 9th leadoff hitter out and put us all four guys. I think we all got on base, too. Made him look great. And we all had power, except for Freddie Kipp. So, as far as hitting, and of course, even in the American League, they had not come to the DH, so I was getting to hit.
Sure.
And when Dressen was managing over there, he left me in a few ball games into the 9th and 10th because I could swing the bat a little bit, and that was an asset.
How about your fielding? You mentioned that you looked like you're kind of falling out of a tree at the end of your motion there. Did that hinder your fielding ability?
I wasn't bad. I had a good quick pickoff move. I was the guy I know that I played with. They called the cat. Was Harry Bikin, and Bob Miller foot was one of the best fielding pitchers in quickness. I wasn't bad. I think I got one unassisted double play. I think in San Francisco, but I. As far as a chance, I didn't make a lot of. If I made any errors, they were throwing, I think.
Okay.
But I was decent.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't hurt me. I got hit. I'll tell you what did happen to me in my career is that my ball tailing away from the right-hander.
Uh-huh.
I got hit. Wagner hitting me broke my toe in '64. Let's see, '64 or '65. Paul Shaw, Angel should be here in the chest. Hershiser almost hit me right between the eyes. I hit my top of the bill of my cap. I just didn't get out of the way. Spring training, we didn't throw with a screen.
Uh-huh.
I get hit in the forearm and the legs all the time. I get hit quite a few times because the guys see the ball and the ball starts to go away, and they go back through the middle. So the ball, I got a lot of balls back through the middle out there.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some of the umpires in your career. As a pitcher, you have a lot of interaction on a pitch-by-pitch basis. Were there any guys that you felt were better than others? Or how was the quality of it overall to start with? And then were there some guys you thought were really on the top of the game?
I felt the National League was better because it favored, I was taught coming up, is to pitch down in the strike zone. You stay away from the extra base hit. So you pitch down. The National League, with the inside protectors set over, the outside pitch was what you got. In the American League, wasn't. So I felt that I was at a little disadvantage, except for Runge.
Okay.
The old guy,
yeah.
Big, nice, big white strike zone. He was pretty good. In the National League, I thought the difference, and might American League umpires might feel hurt by it, but I never felt that they run guys up in the American League with two strikes like they do in the National League.
Really?
Yeah, I remember pitching in 59 and making a good pitch on Banks, Edzikowski, and I just caught the outside part, and he called Banks out with a couple of guys on base. I've had, all the good top hitters called, out.
Mm-hmm.
American League, they'll call up to two strikes, and then if they don't swing, Jastrzemski, Carew, all the guys that hit over there never got called out. They'd miss balls almost down the middle of the plate. And that's where the pitch was. And they just, I just felt that. And maybe the National League guys felt that too, but maybe I was, new over there, in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you had a tough time getting anybody called out on strikes. And I thought that's why the games were always longer. I found out why the games are longer now. A good friend of mine's an umpire in the National League, Larry Poncino. He said there's 3 minutes between each half inning that's for television.
Yeah.
Sure. Or a minute and a half. It's either 3 to 6 minutes an inning. So that's 54 minutes that the game is held up.
They talk about shortening the game. They should just shorten the commercials.
Well, I mean, they should go ahead and play the game while, you know, the commercials run. But that makes the game slower. But I just felt the some of the incidents that you mentioned about the fly ball. Well, I remember the one incident, I'm trying to think of the little guy with the kicking incident with with Durocher in this.
Al Barlick?
This is an older guy. He lives in Arizona, lives in Chicago, and I know when he umpired there was a 2-hour game. So you better swing because he lived in Chicago. And he was a short little umpire. He'd been around a long time. He'd retired. Him and Durocher got in a kick in. The thing about it is the umpire had shin guards on. I wish I could think of his name. Barlick was one of the best ball and strike umpires. Daskoli was very good. I said Joukowsky was good. Vargo came up a little later, so did Harvey, but some of the guys that were there, I thought were good. I got a fair shot at Donatelli. Had been there. I remember him. Some of the umpires were all pretty good.
As far as players nowadays are concerned, are there any players that you admire so much you would pay to see them play?
Now?
Yeah.
Well, I think that, the stars that are out there now, they're emerging, a little bit. I like the guys that give you good effort. I heard somebody announcing, I don't know what thing about, Rip Gonzalez of Texas for not running the ball out.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, the other guy says something about a bad leg, but he's making $4 million and can't run to first base. To me, that's the thing that hurts the game with a guy making the big money, see? Now, the hitter now, a little more intimidating where he stands and looks at his home run and, you know, and watches the ball, but I think Bonds and I think Griffey, you know, this is the game these guys. Here's another one coming up, Bagwell. You know, this is great to see some of the
young
good players. As far as the guys who do a little running and the stealing, Sanders and a little flamboyant. But the game needs, you know, guys like that. I say, you know, he runs hard. Matt Williams is like more of the old school. Mm-hmm. He's kind of, you know, plays his game and, you know, and doesn't do a lot of the flair. He hits the ball, runs around the bases when he hits a home run. As far as the pitching, a guy like Randy Johnson, I don't know if the people want to see more of an offensive game, but they're getting it. I never seen, looks to me, it looks like football scores. I mean, the number of runs, double figure. I don't know, when you were younger, if you heard about the 13-run pull?
No.
Huh?
No, no.
Football, they do it in 33. You know, if you pick teams, and if your team scores 13 runs, you win the pool. And everybody picks two teams or whatever, and you have, you know, because 13 would be such an odd, plus a lot of runs to be scored.
Right, sure.
And so if you got anybody got carried away and won 13 runs, it would go 2-3 months before someone would get there. Now they go right on by it to 16, 17, 18.
That's right.
You know, and so we used to put a pool, and you put in so much every week. So you had so many guys, you used to get 100, 200 bucks in a pool. Someone hits 13 runs. You know, so I mean,
it's common now.
Yeah, it's common rather than that. Used to, when we played 4-2, 5-6-7, 13 runs, so it never happened.
As a pitcher,
it was Jaco Kama.
Jaco Kama.
Right, that's who it is, yeah. Do you have the incident there?
It was a pitcher.
I was there, yeah. I remember that, yeah. Jaco was, and I run into him in Arizona, getting a haircut, I was doing instruction. Like, he lives in Phoenix or Scottsdale, and he retired there, and he's a character. Good umpire, though.
Did you have any superstitions as a player that...
Couple. I used to step over the line, never liked to do that, and I didn't want anybody to pick my glove up or hand it to me. I had my glove. I used to put my glove and my hat on the either the first, second step or whatever. And then when I went out, so like if I was on base or something, I'd just tell them, put it down, and I would get it. I try not to get too many. Some of the guys, you know, eat the same food or wear the same, you know, clothes. I try. That's the only two that I had. And as far as used to collect the game balls the early part of my career, and then I quit doing it. I did get all four of the balls in the series, and Buehler got them, and he wrote the games on them, whatever, and I kept those. So and I have my shoes and my glove from the series, plus they usually gave me the full set of the uniform. But memorabilia, I've got some pictures. I've got an autographed ball from every year, and I've tried to keep a hat from every place that I've been, you know, as far as that. I have this ring. I have the 63 ring I gave to my son, and this one I'll give to my daughter.
When you played, who was your favorite? Who was your favorite ball player when you played? Either teammate or opponent? Did you have a?
Well, see, I came up out here. My favorite team players were Hollywood guys that played the Hollywood Stars.
Okay, sure.
So Frank Kelleher, Tony Lupien. These were all guys that played out here. Actually, Irv Noren played for Hollywood Stars, but Frank Kelleher. Trying to think who the. I knew all the names of all the players. So the first time I saw a major league team, I saw Cleveland come out and play Pittsburgh in spring training, and I was now about 10 or 12, I think. And Feller pitched, and I said, "No, this guy, this major leagues has got to be." I mean, he was throwing hard then. This was late 40s, right? And most of the guys I watched, I'd sneak in behind that second game of doubleheader and right behind the box seats, and it looked like they threw pretty hard. And I'm watching Feller throw, this guy's throwing 100 miles an hour. These guys in the big leagues, AAA guys, are probably throwing in the 80s. I mean, so 20 miles an hour. I mean, you can see the tail on the ball at night.
Uh-huh.
When a guy's throwing that hard, see when Koufax threw. I said, you see the ball in your eyes to watch the ball, you'll see a white tail on the back of the ball when you're throwing that hard.
Wow.
So, I mean, Feller just, I think he punched out Kiner about 2-3 times in spring training. But as far as having big league idols, I didn't, because we never followed the Coast League. I mean, never followed the major leagues out here so much, So I didn't really have any until when I got into playing, then I saw all the Brooklyn guys. So those guys were, I saw Snyder in his prime and Campanella and then I saw Williams play. Used to be when you're in the minor leagues there, they could go down the left field line at Holman Stadium. You'd wear your blue hat, didn't have an insignia on it, but you had a blue hat, and you could get into the ball game, and it let you off in the afternoon. My first uniform when I came to spring training was with the I think I was with the Bakersfield club, but we didn't have any uniform. It was 156, and it was a brown uniform. I mean, it was a brown number, and it was just like all everybody had the same uniform. They gave you a hat, and they gave you blue socks. And, and the scouts came around, with a list of all these players. If you had a bad arm, you wore a white hat, and if you had bad legs, you didn't wear any blue socks. So that's to show that you weren't, faking or whatever, so they could distinguish. I remember those things, specifically in the minor leagues.
Now, you mentioned that Jack O'Connell was a character, and you played on the Dodgers, which is a team with a history of characters, and played on a Detroit team that was a pretty freewheeling group also. Mention some of the characters that you played it with, if you wouldn't mind, and if there's a few stories that you would like to write about them. Please feel free to do
so. Yeah, we could write a book with
But you don't have to go that way. You don't have to go that way. But just, a few things. You can on the field sort of stuff. Like you mentioned where the guy where you were pitching, the ball hit behind his bat.
Yeah. The Dodgers things I mentioned about Olson losing his ring, I think the one night in Milwaukee, Koufax was going to pitch the next day, and we were staying downtown Detroit, and many two places you'd go. So there's a local bar, you know, restaurant right next door. So we get through. They used to play day games, Milwaukee, all the back east. The Dodgers always played at night, but we always had Saturday, Sunday afternoon games. So this was 60 or 61. And the pitching staff, Drysdale was there. I know Padres is in there. Paranoski, myself, Roebuck, McDevitt. I didn't realize, and Sandy walked in, he looked down, and it's all nine of the pitching staff. He bought a round, he said, "I'm going to bed." He says, "Attaboy, Sandy." You know, he pitched, went all nine innings. I figured he wasn't going to get any help. You know, so, you know, which wasn't true. But, you know, but when Sandy or Don pitched, you usually might have the night off, you know.
Right,
so
he
pretty
right.
much, you know. The guys who, you know, freewheeling, you know, but the things that we did was socially, like, we'd have the Dodger plane and have to make the trips. You used to get your itinerary. 15th Eastern swing, you know. I mean, how many times should you had to go from the coast back to east? So it wasn't like you're just making trips. So every trip was at least 2,000 miles to Chicago. So we used to have Mondays off, and which was pretty good in the scheduling because we're coming all the way from the east. So, and the club, this is the difference of the clubs now that we're flying over and we're getting into L.A., all the wives are going to be there, and so we said, heck with it, you're going to go eat, we get in about 6 o'clock. Why don't, Monday be an off day, you can come up to my house. I lived over near the near Dodger Stadium. This was 60 or 61, I think. And I'll cook some steaks. I think 21 or 22, 40-something people of the team. Mm-hmm. All about 3-4 guys showed up. I got Koufax bartending, making drinks, whatever. I got everybody sitting out in the patio all over the house. And I got Drysdale cooking the steaks. I borrowed the guy's grill next door so I could put 6 or 8 on at a time like that. And here's the whole team over there, you know. And if somebody had a little bit too much to drink, then we make sure some of the guys stayed at the hotel. Like probably we get somebody to drive the guys home, whatever, you know. And Monday was off. And you got a game, sleep all day for, you know, for Tuesday. But that's the closeness of the whole ball club. I don't know if the guys even room together anymore. Everybody's got their own room, right, you know, and whatever. And so you have a lot more closeness, you know, with your players. So then when you got into the end of the season and you're down in the nitty-gritty playing, you knew your players socially, you know, off the field, not just as your teammate. And, you know, you pulled for them. And so, you know, you had a little bit more going, and the guy knew that you were behind him. Detroit was a little bit different when Dressing over there, because Dressing did some things that, you know, when he managed, I think he liked to have been a detective in his life. With my roommate Cash Norman, Storm and Norman. And I know when he was at Milwaukee, when he managed the club there, he gave the elevator operator baseball. And he said after 1 o'clock in the morning, which was curfew, any of the guys that you see get on the elevator, you get their autograph. So the next day, he come to the park and he puts the ball on the table and he said, "I got all you guys." He gave the ball to the guy that, you know, the next night. But Charlie, if you told him what you were doing, you know, he couldn't figure it out. He started following Norm around on the road, and so he didn't want to catch me. So he made me room with Phil Regan. So I told Norm what he was doing, saying, "Charlie's telling me, you know, because, you know, he's going to catch me, right?" So we're in Washington, and Campbell, general manager, is in town. So Norm and I come in, we got a night game, whatever, but we come in together after the game, and he goes, checks his messages, he got a message from Charlie to call him. So he goes up to the room, I go up with him, and he calls Charlie, and no answer. He pages him in the bar, no answer. So I said, "I'm going to bed," so I go to bed, you know, and next morning, I see Norm, whatever, and he said, you know, I was kind of interested to see what was going on. You got a hold of Charlie. He says, "No." I said, "I called him until 2:30 in the morning," and I said, "I couldn't get a hold of him." So in Washington, a lot of times, they wait for the bus. Guys take cabs. I take a cab out to the ballpark. And Charlie's in his office. Now, you watch, he whistles. He always whistles all the time. I stopped. He said, "You see Cash last night?" And I said, yeah. I said, he was looking for you, trying to call you. I says, he called you at 2:30 in the morning. Charlie says, that's right. Let him look for me once in a while.
So, Charlie is a beauty.
I told Norm. Norm went in and talked to him, and that was, they stopped that. It's, you know, it got to be, you know, you got to know Charlie. You know, I had to be the peacemaker between them. You know.
Why don't you just tell us a little bit about some of the, you mentioned it a couple times earlier, but you do work with some younger players now, high school and college and even younger players. Tell a little bit about that and tell them how, you know, tell them about some,
what,
I guess, some of the,
what I've been doing for the last, since 87, since 88, guy used to be in the Dodger Angel organization. He caught, and he coached at college. Mike Stubbins has a batting cage up in Arcadia, and I teach pitching. We give private lessons from January through part of July sometimes, and I'll work with kids from 18 all the way up through college. And I just work on the weekends, and I do some clinics with him. In fact, 89, we went over, and I taught in Italy for about 2-3 months.
Wow,
so it brought my wife, and it was a vacation type thing. But they, he's got some connections over there. He's been back and managed over there. We were in the city of Livorno, which is over by Leg, what they call Leghorn over there. And we used to do sessions with four different groups. We started about 8, 9 in the morning. They siesta. Then we go from like 5, 6 at night. And then the last 2-3 weeks, my wife came over, and we traveled. We went to Florence and to Venice and Lake Como up in there. And
so it was,
we were up the lake did some, you know, traveling over there. So I've done that. He's asked me to go. He's got this other thing that they got some kids. They went over to Japan. I might go back to Italy again next year. I like working with the younger kids. I can do it on my time schedule, and more or less I can do that, and play some golf. But more or less, Little League ends around June, and so it slows down. I've got some people, dozen, so we would do this all year round, you know. And they keep calling me, when are you going to start again? And I usually start up in December or whatever. And I've got one kid just graduated from San Clemente High School. A kid named Chad Wanders. He got a free ride at University of Hawaii. So I've been working since he's 13. So he's one of my kids. Come on, I got a left-hander that's out of Palos Verdes. So I've got people traveling, you know, quite a distance, you know, to get me. A lot of the kids, most of them take the lessons, are not going to do well or even get into high school. But a lot of them, what I feel I do for them, and where you get repeat people coming back, is that they're able to compete with their peers. They're not going to be that great, but the lessons do enough for them at their level they can compete. And the kids come back to me and tell me how they do, and I get a big kid. They got a big grin on their face, and then I'll get some guy that comes over with his kid and said, did you work with Joe Jones over here? Because he couldn't do anything, you know, and he beat us last week, you know. And so that's the fun about it. So the guy said, I've got my kids pretty good. If you can